ED preparation courses to young people ages 17 to 21. Our program will prepare students to pass the examination for the general equivalency diploma. Career workshops, resume preparation, and job referrals will be provided to students who qualify. For more information, call us at 212-996-0161. That's 212-996-0161.
Well, just remember, their motto is protect and serve.
If you've been abused or harassed by the police, then document it. Call the New York City Police Watch Hotline at 212-614-6454. For information and legal referrals, the New York City Police Watch Hotline, 212-614-6454. If the police abuse or harass, let's document it. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, a nonprofit organization.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial. New York.
Pencil.
Okay, this is Joe Franklin broadcasting on radio station WBAI.
It's 99.5% all natural and preservative free. WBAI FM in New York.
I love this radio station.
We had to hold a gun to his head to get him to say that. But anyway, we're not under any duress here. It's radio station WBAI in New York, and we're all here of our own free will. Time now for Off the Hook. Our theme, however, is another story. Very good evening to everybody. Sorry for the technical difficulties. And if you think we're having technical difficulties tonight, Just wait till Friday, January 31st, 1999. We're going to be speaking about Y2K for the most part tonight, how it may or may not affect you and your loved ones and your hated ones and everybody else on the planet. First, however, some news items and some listener feedback, which we always encourage. This out of Los Angeles, in its quest to make the radio airwaves safe for Alanis Morissette, Dr. Laura and deodorant commercials, the FCC busted pirate radio station KBLT earlier this month, seizing its transmitter and shutting down Los Angeles' newest and most diverse music outlet. They don't even play this kind of music on commercial radio. And that's so mellow and bland and boring, you know? I mean, think about it. That's good for the future elevator music. Anyway, KBLT is the brainchild of Paige Jarrett, a former San Francisco pirate broadcaster who once nurtured dreams of owning a radio station until she was told it carried a $20 million price tag. Instead, Jarrett hooked up with a pal who built a transmitter, antenna, and cable. You can do that for under $1,000. A couple hundred bucks, you can do that. So why $20 million? I mean, where's the $20 million coming from? Good question. Then in November 1995, after moving to Los Angeles, she began broadcasting some of the funkiest and most interesting sounds around. Before long, KBLT's list of DJs included local musicians such as Bob Forrest, Mike Watt, and Keith Morris. The shows ranged from country to gospel to French pop, with all the DJs playing whatever they liked. Sound familiar? Well, stations like WBAI and a shrinking number of college radio stations are very few and far between in this country, and you have massive corporations winding up owning multiple hundreds of radio stations throughout the country and broadcasting the same basic sound. I mean, you've always known radio is corrupt. We've always known about the payola and the bribes, and you know, if you don't pay off certain people, your music doesn't get played and that kind of thing. But it was always on a city-by-city basis. Well, now it's completely nationwide. You know, you piss somebody off in one corporation and forget it. Your news, your music, nothing gets said on any airwaves, any place. Complete and total control. And yet the FCC continues to move against these low-wattage pirate radio stations. And in case you couldn't tell by my tone, I was putting pirate in quotes because it seems to me the real pirates are the ones who have completely taken over lock, stock, and barrel. Anyway, KBLT came to a halt on Friday. I believe that would be Friday, November 6th, if I'm not mistaken. And that happened as Jarrett was checking on her transmitter, which was located in a remote area. The mistress of pirate radio bumped into two FCC agents who said she could either give her name and pay a fine of $11,000 or forfeit the equipment and get a receipt. Jarrett was forced to give them her transmitter, and KBLT currently is no more. As is the case with low-wattage stations all around the country, including right here in New York City. We'll continue to keep people updated on that particular chain of events here and elsewhere. Eventually, it's going to crack. Eventually, people are going to say, enough. We want the airwaves back. So all these people staring at me in the other room. It's kind of strange. Hello, how you doing? I think the station's being taken over by... Are they fundamentalists again? We just kicked them all out last week, all the fundamentalists. They didn't like one of the words that we said. I don't even know what word it was. Maybe it was fundamentalist. I don't know. Anyway, here's some listener feedback. We always like getting listener feedback, and if you want to feedback to us, there's two ways of doing it. One is by mailing us here at WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And right off the hook on the top of the envelope so it gets to the right people. The other way is by email, oth@2600.com. That'll get right to the hosts and participants of this radio show. And here's a listener feedback letter here. I think MTV should be added to your list of sites that should be hacked. Yeah, in case you don't know, on our 2600.com website, we have a list of web pages that have been hacked, and a fairly new feature is something that we thought would be fun to try, a list of sites that should be hacked. Not necessarily should be hacked, but what if this site got hacked? What would it look like? And this is a completely legitimate and legal way for some people to express themselves creatively. We've had Amazon.com get quote-unquote hacked. And really, we had the White House, we had Microsoft. There's no limit to what you can do. You just take a web page and imitate it and then submit it to us. And, you know, it's a harmless way of expressing your creativity. So this person is saying that MTV should be added to that list and going a step further, actually hacked in real life. We don't condone that kind of thing, but we'll read the letter anyway. Probably one of the most evil corporations out there, MTV has effectively used psychological manipulation to gain control over, quote, what is popular, unquote, i.e. what teenagers think. In this, you would expect some kind of consideration for what people watch. This network has a tremendously negative influence on youth since it makes crime, money, and Satanism kind of trails off at that point. MTV will endorse anything that they can profit from, whether that be Satanism, gang glamorizing, money, or infidelity. They don't care. They just want the cash. They realize what they are doing. They also realize nobody else realizes it. The people know very well how to manipulate people, and they realize the effects they are having on kids today. Why they don't give a damn is the real reason I'm so mad. Unfortunately, I'm so angry at them, I can't sum up enough humor to make a hacked page of my own. I'm too filled with hatred for this network. I'm sure you know who hacked the Department of Justice. Please advise them that MTV is a social problem in this country, and it is 100 times worse than Microsoft. At least Microsoft has good points, none of which being their Windows operating system's performance. Drop the bombshell on MTV. Well, that's not something that we advocate. And also, you know, the interesting thing here is this person is upset at the Satanism and infidelity that they preach. Well, how about the censorship? You know, that's what bothers me, the fact that they make new words that you can't say over the radio, words like gat, words like joint, you know, things that aren't even obscenities, but they express an idea, and now they start censoring that. And now they cover up all kinds of things that are written on people's shirts and music videos because that might send the wrong message. They're so obsessed with sending the right message and not offending people that they wind up offending everybody. It's really pretty sad. But let's let the videos speak for themselves. And if they upset you, then you contact the people that made the videos. You contact the record companies, the bands, whatever. But MTV exists to broadcast those videos and not pass judgment on them, and I think that's what they're guilty of more than anything. That's just my opinion on it. Here's another bit of feedback on your November 10th show. You were talking about how your Sprint phones were not allowing double forwarding. I have heard rumors that several major phone wireless phone companies are not allowing multi-forwarding because of requests by the FBI. The explanation I have heard is that forwarding through multiple cell accounts makes the FBI lock and trace impossible. Well, that's one theory, but, you know, we tried it with three numbers last week. We tried forwarding phone A to B to C, and it didn't work, but A to B to C to D did. So, you know, they don't know what they're doing, or their system has a few holes of its own. Or maybe it was just a technical problem. Here's another letter. And this is a real letter. I don't make these things up. From in between all those who are no good arises a new star. That new star will be me. I have a few questions for you to answer. I'd love to know who's writing this kind of letter here. What language are all these hacking programs written in? Can I get you to hack my school for me? I'll give you the website at a later time. I have a creative hack for you. Run a virus during a news broadcast, like on ABC World News or something. Run a funny virus. That will get you some attention. Signed, Lord Deathcon. Oh, gee whiz. With suggestions like that, I mean, I just don't know where to turn next. A funny virus during World News Now. Let's get to work on that, guys. This could really change people's opinions of hackers permanently. All right, here's another letter. This one comes from Crash Override. Where have I heard that name before? Hey, 2600, what's up? I need some help from some good hackers, and you are the only ones I can think of that are elite. He capitalized elite. Isn't that cool? I have a problem, and I need some help to make a person's life a living hell. He has been an ass to me and my friends. He already has threatened to kill me, but he doesn't have the balls to do it. I would love it if you would help me hack into stuff and screw with his life. Like hack into the DMV on Cape Cod and give him some serious crimes, or just make his life living hell. Well, I'd really like you to help me, but if you don't, please tell me some people that would love to help a fellow hacker. Your fellow hacker, Crash Override. You know, ever since that damn film came out, I must have gotten mail from maybe 500 Crash Overrides and a few thousand acid burns. And it's really starting to get to me, you know, because these people, they say, oh, we're fellow hackers, we're real people, and they're nothing but jerks, idiots, just stupid people. And I don't mean to use such rough language, but actually, no, I do mean to use such rough language because they need to hear it. And hacking is not about screwing people over. It's not about committing crimes and messing things up. It's about creativity, exploration, sharing of knowledge. Get that through your thick skulls. It's not about getting people to commit crimes for you. Yeah, you know, you can use technology for all kinds of evil purposes. That's the point, that we make people aware of this. We get the word out. Not that we go and create mayhem for no particular reason whatsoever, just to get even with some idiot down at the corner drugstore who threatened to commit some form of violence on you or one of your relatives or whatever. It's not what it's about. That's what physical violence is for. Use that. Don't use hacking. All right. Well, will it ever end? No, it never will. Agent Steele is on the run again. He sent in a communique from someplace out there. Kind of interesting. It's like history repeating itself all over again. Agent Steele's now, what, the third time he's been a fugitive? I don't know. It's Isaac, you've been following the story, haven't you?
Agent Steele,
the one and only agent. So I can find your microphone. There's like 5,000 microphones. Try that again.
It's the one with the yellow cable.
Yeah, but you see, the yellow cable doesn't make it all the way over here.
Oh, okay. I've been monitoring the Mitnick list. Other than that, I haven't been seeing much about it.
Yeah, well, he's on the run again, and basically, I'm trying to think what the best part of this to read is, because it's awfully long.
Now, he actually wrote this?
He wrote this, yes.
Okay.
From an undisclosed location. He's saying he's out of the country.
Okay.
Which, for his sake, would be a good idea, knowing the way they track people down. Why did I snitch on Mitnick? Well, first of all, I never knew Mitnick before my involvement with the FBI. They suggested I look into what he was up to. I did. I contacted him, and a case ensued. Many hours of conversations between myself, Louis DePayne, and Mitnick were tapped, and all of our meetings were under FBI surveillance. At first, they trusted me enough to share hack-related info. Mitnick confided that he was working for a PI firm selling them special information. This is what the Bureau had heard and thus initiated the investigation. Eventually, due to lax security on the behalf of the FBI, Mitnick and DePayne figured out what I was up to. At that point, I was getting tired of the FBI's BS and did nothing to prevent Mitnick from figuring it all out. When he learned he was about to be raided, he fled. DePayne would have you believe they were onto me from the start, and the Takedown movie is a story according to DePayne. However, Takedown referring to the movie, of course. However, this is not the truth. Let me ask this. If Mitnick knew I was an informant, why did he tell me so much, and why did he flee if he was innocent? I do regret my involvement with the FBI. At the time, I thought it was the right thing to do. I spoke with Mitnick in prison and apologized. I even spoke with his attorney in person and offered to shed light on what was going on behind the scenes. I wrote a letter of formal apology to DePayne. Unfortunately, neither of them has been man enough to accept this, and they have continued to create small problems for me. So at this point, I have no reason to help either side, prosecution or defense. If for some reason, some far-fetched reason, I am captured and brought to trial, what I have to say will not be flattering for either side. It goes on in quite a lot of detail, trying to justify his actions of the past. And judging from the reaction that this has gotten so far, this was released to the Mitnick mailing list, it's just not selling. It's just not selling. Somebody who intentionally goes around trying to get somebody into trouble, trying to get somebody to commit crimes, as he has been accused of doing, just doesn't create a very high image. And you have to wonder, you know, this guy has committed so many crimes, yet he was never sentenced to anything near what Mitnick has already served before going to trial. He was never given front page articles like Mitnick has been. Was not treated like a criminal at all. I mean, not the kind of criminal Mitnick has been treated as, and yet Mitnick was never accused of stealing anything. Agent Steele was accused of stealing. His name pretty much spells that out. Stealing Porsches or you know, money or whatever. You know, he's accused of all kinds of things. Long list
of criminal activity, yet the government hired him. The government hired him to get Kevin Mitnick in trouble. You have to wonder, what are the priorities? We've seen this before. We saw this in years past with the fiber optic case, the Bernie S. case. The people who do the real harm wind up walking. And the people who don't do any harm whatsoever, the people who just have the brains that explain how things work to other people, they're the ones that get thrown into prison with hardened criminals. It's really it's a strange world we live in. Now, who knows what's going to happen with this now that he's on the run and making a bit of a case about being on the run. We'll have to see how the federal government deals with this, if they ignore him, if they go after him, if he's ever caught. So it's a tough one, but it's interesting to see it all pan out again. That's the story with Agent Steele. We'll be keeping you up to date on that as the weeks go on. But now, it's time for the main thrust of tonight's program. The year 2000. Countdown to doom. Yes, it's coming. None of us can stop it. It's on the horizon, and it's getting closer with every passing minute. I'm talking about January 1st, 2000. Just over a year away. And nobody knows how it's going to turn out. They say America and Russia should shut down their nuclear arsenals rather than risk Armageddon because of year 2000 glitches, according to a military research group. Y2K errors could cause the systems to go haywire, leading to an erroneous early warning report, or even triggering an accidental launch of a nuclear missile. And that's according to the British American Security Information Council. 36-page report. They don't mess around. Both superpowers keep their arsenals in a constant state of readiness, a Cold War-era strategy that could backfire with devastating results if the computer gremlins strike. If Y2K breakdowns were to produce inaccurate early warning data, or if communications and command channels were to be compromised, the combination of hair trigger force postures and Y2K failures could be disastrous. That's according to the author of The Bug and the Bomb,
the impact of the year 2000 problem on nuclear weapons. You see, nuclear weapon systems are laced with embedded systems controlling functions such as ballistics and sensors that have not been declared free from year 2000 worries. Most missiles also keep track of time since the last monthly or yearly servicing, which could transform weapons into plutonium-packed paperweights if the systems shut down on January 1st, 2000. A Defense Department official who spoke on condition of anonymity said nuclear weapon systems have received the Pentagon's full attention and will be in good shape. He added, military leaders are already discussing Y2K issues with their Russian counterparts. So far, terrorist officials have not gotten back to them. And we have some tips for being prepared for the year 2000. The Y2K personal preparedness list here comes from the site y2ktool.com. Accepting that the year 2000 problems are real, despite what you may have seen or heard. Appreciating there is not enough money or manpower to solve all the problems in time, and that many are facing a catch-22 scenario. Admitting fear or anxiety, but avoiding panic. Maintaining a good sense of humor. And keeping your cool. Preparing your home and workplace for disruptions in utilities, telecommunications, transportation, and government services. Understanding that interdependence will create a domino effect so pervasive that virtually everyone on Earth will be impacted by Y2K. Acknowledging that neither Bill Clinton nor Bill Gates can prevent the Millennium Meltdown from affecting you and what you care about. Protecting your loved ones from potential nuclear perils, healthcare calamities, and other embedded systems anomalies. Preserving the value of your investments, retirement accounts, and other assets. And proactively cooperating with, enlightening, and assisting others in your community, workplace, industry, and around the world. They say that due to liability issues, businesses aren't going to disclose their true risk from Y2K. In order to stem fear and panic, governments will do their best to prevent full disclosure of their year 2K risk. The mainstream media hasn't informed the public about Y2K in an adequate and timely manner. Fear-mongering and millennial madness contribute to Y2K misinformation and misunderstanding. And there are several reasons why Y2K projects won't be completed on time. Historically, most computer projects don't finish on time. The Y2K problem is the largest computer project in history, and it has a fixed deadline. Y2K is much more than a computer project. It is an unprecedented business problem of epic proportions. Most Y2K projects were initiated too late, and not enough time remains. The effort required to fix Y2K has been grossly underestimated in most cases. Not enough specialists are available to perform the work. Y2K project managers have no technical precedent and are in uncharted territory. Most businesses and governments still don't have effective Y2K plans in place. Many still have no Y2K plans. Do you have a Y2K plan? Reasons why Y2K should be a concern for you personally. Electricity, telephones, and banks are completely dependent on computers. Your standard of living is completely dependent on electricity, telephones, and banks. The majority of people will not be adequately informed and educated, much less prepared for the probable consequences of Y2K. Our goal, meaning the goal of Y2KWatch.com, from which this information is coming from, our goal is to be a voice of reason in helping people prepare spiritually, physically, and financially. And yes, there are a number of products that this company is selling to help them financially. But you'll have to go to their site to see that. If you're not part of the solution to Y2K awareness and preparation, you're part of the problem. We recommend you hope and pray for the best, but prepare for the near worst. Better safe than sorry. And finally, knowing a lot of facts about Y2K won't be beneficial unless you apply that knowledge. And finally, we have a list of items that are for sale that we can talk about. The Y2K Survival Kit, version 1.0. You can find this at cmsassociates.com. Here it is, the original and only Y2K Survival Kit, the ultimate protection against Y2K, the millennium, and office boredom. This is sure to be the gift of the millennium. Reserve yours now. Top quality textured aluminum case with embossed riveted Y2K Survival Kit, plate, secure latch, and black velvet lining. It does look really impressive. Computer's going to crash? No problem. The Y2K Survival Kit includes a brand new replacement computer with no electronic parts or silicon chips. An abacus, the world's first computer. Light's going to go out? No problem. The Y2K Survival Kit includes a portable light source with energy cells. A flashlight. Navigation system's going to fail? No problem. No problem, Mr. Orchestra Leader. Everybody be calm. The Y2K Survival Kit includes a personal navigation system to find your way home. A compass! The world's first GPS. Machine's going to break down? No problem. The Y2K Survival Kit includes a palm-sized toolkit to fix broken machines and secure food and shelter. A multi-purpose survival tool. When is this going to happen? The Y2K Survival Kit includes a millennium countdown clock that shows current date and time, along with the days, hours, and minutes until the year 2000. And it will operate after the year 2000. How can I tell if my computer is going to be affected? Should I run? Should I hide? The Y2K Survival Kit includes the amazing Y2K Computer Failure Predictor Dice. One roll will tell you if your computer will recognize 00 as the year 1900 or 2000. Hey, who really knows? tell you one thing. I can hardly wait. How about you?
I'm just ready for whatever comes down the pipe there.
Are you really? Are you ready for anything?
Oh.
Are you ready for those Russian nuclear missiles to just accidentally hit into Queens or something?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things... I'm sure you're familiar with the term failsafe.
Yeah, it's bad.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, yeah. What happens...
Remember that film? It ended with the whole world getting blown up.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a number of them where we nuke Moscow and, like, the president says, oh, we'll nuke New York.
Is that the one where the guy rides the nuclear missile like a horse?
No, that was another one. Bombing
Moscow.
That was another one.
Okay,
I don't remember the title.
Yeah, I mix them all up.
But one of the things about these silos...
Dr. Strangelove, that's what that one was.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
One of the things about these silos is that a lot of the Minuteman missiles, once they are put on alert, where I'm not going to use any specific terminology because people are suddenly going to question where I got this. But
well, you can say an anonymous source if you want.
Oh, the anonymous source, namely myself. But anyway, one of the things that happens is you are fully dependent on communications, so that if all of a sudden your particular site, be it a silo or otherwise, loses comms with National Authoritative Command, be it Looking Glass Plane or the White House itself, your orders are launch.
Mm-hmm.
So this may have to be revised.
All right. Well, you see, you know, we really can't waste all our time worrying about what the guys in Washington and Moscow are going to do. Let's bring it close to home.
Close
How is this
home.
Going to affect me? My grocery shopping habits, my, you know, electricity, my telephones, you know, things like that. Ray's here, and he's got some ideas.
Well, let's start with the embedded controllers that control security systems around.
Okay.
Okay, now that the system isn't Y2K, you can no longer get into the control room at the nuclear power plant to make adjustments.
Okay, all right. Again, nuclear stuff. But how about non-nuclear stuff?
Non-nuclear stuff.
I mean, you know, if the world gets blown up, all right, the world gets blown up.
There's a number of scenarios you can have, ranging from fairly benign to catastrophic. And then, of course, the ultimate catastrophe is nuclear Armageddon, but it's typically just ignored because you can't do anything.
Actually, you can, but, well, that's another program.
Well, yeah, you can leave the planet and...
Well, you can also affect some change from the grassroots level, but that's another series.
Are you going to do that in a year, though?
We've been trying to do it now for a long time.
That's true.
And
so I don't see why.
Time for people to start waking up.
That's, well, very much.
Again, that's another program. So,
okay. Benign. Let's see. You may have a lot of slight inconveniences, to say the least.
Like what?
Well, there have been problems with, say, in the very beginning when credit cards were issued for expiration dates of year 2000, people who were going to the grocery stores and using these cards to pay.
Okay, but isn't that a one-time thing? You know, you get it's in the interest of the credit card companies to fix
to
that.
Fix that.
They're not
going to
say, oh, you're out of luck because your credit card expired 100 years ago.
Yes.
They're
going
to want to fix that. So one time it gets messed up and then they change it. They say, okay, it's not 1900 computer, it's 2000. So deal
and
with that
they
and
did
move
fix
on.
That. But the problem was that it took about weeks to months to make this change,
mm-hmm.
at which point a lot of these people were having some serious problems so far as their financial stability, because people now were fairly reliant on credit cards.
This is one of the reasons I'm happy to live on a planet where time is predictable.
That's true.
As opposed to those where time hits you by surprise. We know when 2000 is coming. We know it's going to be here December 31st, 1999, right after that. So we have time to figure this out. We know exactly what's coming.
Well,
so why can't we get it right?
Well, you're thinking as an individual who is fairly well motivated. IBM, up until a few years ago, would take 6 months to ship an empty box.
So maybe IBM will go the way of the dinosaur.
That's true, but one of the problems is all of IBM's products will also go the way of the dinosaur.
And why should that concern me?
Why should that concern you? Because IBM machines control some fairly serious systems. For instance, one of the more interesting scenarios is government computer systems having serious problems so far as date processing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most interesting scenarios I've been proposing to people is this coming April. The state of New York will start inputting its data for fiscal year 2000.
That's pretty optimistic there, assuming there's going to be a year 2000.
Well, again, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start putting in a number of those zeros, you may start seeing the computer going, huh,
uh-huh,
and doing 100-year off kind of things. So now all of a sudden, Social Security checks, welfare checks, food stamps, and a lot of other government-paid programs aren't going to be shipped out. So now you have a number of people who are fairly well dependent on these particular grantings of mm-hmm. just monetary of monies, and they're not getting their checks.
But again, how long do you think this will go on for before somebody says, hey, this is what it takes to fix that?
Well,
it's literally moving a couple of numbers around. You know?
It's very complicated in that most of these programs were written in COBOL.
Mm-hmm.
To tell you the truth, I don't know COBOL.
Well, that's the other
I don't know
thing.
Many people who do.
What's with these people that wrote these programs in the first place? In the 60s, didn't they think we were going to make it to the 2000s?
Well, in the 60s, they were far more concerned with memory.
Mm-hmm.
In that, did you ever have a Commodore 64?
Actually, I skipped that somehow.
You skipped that?
Yeah, but I was aware of the whole, 16K and 32K,
Well,
nobody's ever going to need more than 64K of memory.
Right, and, everything you'll ever need will fit on a 5.25-inch disk. But back in the day, as it were, you had serious constraints so far as memory,
mm-hmm.
in that storing a date as 2 digits for a month, 2 digits for a year, and 2 digits for a day, and 4 digits for a year, you were simply repeating that 19 over and over and over and over and over again.
2 digits for a day?
Yes.
There's only 7 days. Why do you need 2 digits for a day?
Well, the 28th of April.
Oh, the date. I see what you're saying. Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right.
The day was usually computed.
Right.
But the point was they needed to save memory because memory was very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep having those 19s continually processed made no sense. So they said, okay, here's your 6-digit date stamp,
mm-hmm.
including your month, date, and year. Nobody ever revised that. Companies who paid to have the software written back in 1960-something had a working system, and they didn't see the problem.
All could have been avoided if computers had been invented in the late 1800s, like, say,
that's
1890.
True.
Then they would have said, hey, we're going to have 3 digits for the date, and then somebody else would have said, as long as we're doing 3 digits, why not do four,
There you go.
All right.
But, if Babbage's machine worked, that would be pretty cool. But anyway.
Well, now, okay, what can individuals do? Let's open up the phone lines. 212-209-2900, except for you, Rebel. Call, what's a good number for him to call? That really expensive one down in Guam, where you talk to the lady who basically, well, never mind. What can individual people do?
Creedmoor.
As far as getting...
aware or prepared?
Well, should they set their computers ahead and say, oh, it made it past 2000, I'm safe.
Well, a lot of these things you really can't prepare for because you don't know what's going to happen. One of the big survivalist things is ready for everything. Well, the average citizen doesn't really go out and becomes ready for everything.
Someone told me to bury my money in the backyard.
It's not going to be worth anything if Federal Reserve banks crash.
I shouldn't bury it at all.
Well, the piece of paper you have in your hand
mm-hmm.
is, it's got green ink on it, and it says United States government, and everybody seems to respect that as a reasonable means of exchanging goods and services.
Grudgingly, yeah, we accept.
Yeah, well, we have to, and it's mm-hmm. not much of a choice. Unless you want to use Canadian dollars, then you're walking around with twice the number of bills that you'd normally be carrying. But that's besides the point.
It's worth it for the looks on the faces of the people you give it to.
That's true. I've given people Canadian coins. But basically, what hits the fan,
mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the people with food mm-hmm. aren't going to be taking little pieces of paper, because little pieces of paper with the green ink aren't going to mean anything when they have to go and get a shovel or something else. We're going to go, it would very easily be conceivable going back to the big-time barter system,
uh-huh.
where you have what I need, I have what you need,
uh-huh.
let's make a deal.
Okay.
So the intermediary being cash would probably drop out of sight.
You know what's interesting about this, though, is that underdeveloped nations, I don't think are going to be affected at all by this.
No.
Because things are going to go on pretty much as normal. It's the big industrialized nations like us that are going to totally bury ourselves.
The third world is sitting on its very happy plateau. We're just going to fall to their level.
The great equalizer, the year 2000. I'm sure this is in biblical prophecy someplace. Everyone's
Nostradamus
in the Bible. They're all getting these things out. I heard a preacher when I was down in the South who went beyond this. He was talking about how future planets must be Christianized, and
future planets
that we discover in the future, how the word of the Lord must be spread, They've already prepared for this.
To extraterrestrial culture.
Oh, extraterrestrial culture. They're already ready for that, you know. And I always wondered how that was going to be, what kind of transition that was going to be. Apparently, for the missionaries, it's going to be a very smooth transition.
Oh, I'd imagine.
So, I can almost hardly wait just to see how that's going to work out, especially when they meet up with some phasers in the, along the way. All right, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. We're talking about Y2K and why indeed. I'd like to know your viewpoints, your questions, your fears, your panics, whatever it is that that strikes you at this moment, whether it's something that we need to concern ourselves with at all personally. And this is my personal point of view. I think it's a lot of fun to talk about, but I really don't think anything's going to happen. Is there a place I can put money on that? Because I think I stand to win quite a lot because everybody else is saying everything bad's going to happen. I'm the only one saying that nothing at all is going to happen.
I'd imagine Vegas has odds. And
oh,
if you,
Vegas, that's the place
and
to
if,
be.
If you put, the
can you imagine what's going to happen to those machines down there?
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun.
If something were to happen, which I don't think will happen.
Make sure you get a handwritten receipt.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, with four-digit dates.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Let's take a phone call. This has been our lucky line all the times that we've hit it, so I'm going to hit it again. Good evening. You're on the air.
Excuse me?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Speak up.
I'm on the air right now?
Yes, you are. Speak up. You're on the air.
All right. In the 60s, the programmers knew about Y2K,
mm-hmm.
but they made it like that anyway because of course, the lifespan for the computers should have been at the most 10 years.
Well, now, how is it that these computers have lasted so long? Or is it just the programs that got carried over to other computers?
I'm really not sure, but programmers that came to update the system in 10 years didn't fix the problem because it cost too much to replace so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's probably why, yes, because it all has to do with money and finances and things like that. But look at all the money that's been spent on making things Y2K compliant.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, in the billions now?
Yeah.
It's reasonable.
It's insane. All right, where are you calling from?
Michigan.
Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Lovely.
Okay, well, stay out of harm's way there as far as the...
Can I give a shout-out?
Real quick.
Binary Zero.
Okay. That was as quick as we could allow it. By the way, speaking of catastrophe and mayhem in the skies and things like that, I want everybody to go out and see the meteors tonight.
Yes, actually.
Yeah, that's,
I'm planning on that.
Most of the country, in fact, most of the world, you guys over in Europe, it's still dark over there, so if you're listening now, you can probably run out and see it, assuming there aren't any clouds. Something on the order of 1,000 meteors an hour are visible. And they say this may mess up some satellite communications. If one of these little microscopic dust particles happens to hit a satellite in the wrong way, it could create all kinds of electrical interference. It could also do some physical damage. So you might see some preview of what kind of chaos we're in for Y2K. But again, just go out and look at the... At the skies after the show, of course. No, not before.
Yeah, not now.
Here in New York, it's cloudy now, but it's supposed to clear up around midnight. So if you're giving up on it, don't.
Yeah, optimal viewing in New York is between about 1 a.m. and 2 a.m., so I've been hearing.
I've been hearing between 1 and 5.
1 and 5. Well, when you go outside, however long you want to stay.
It's going to be cold, so dress warm. But
yes,
everybody around the country can probably see something, and those of you in other parts. Japan got a great view last night, whatever night was for them last. That's when they got a really great view. That's something that I want everybody to pay strict attention to. The next meteor shower of this nature won't be until the year 2031. So,
assuming, of course, we survive that.
I understand there's a moon that night, too, so you want to definitely keep it in mind that this is going to be a good one if you can see through the clouds. Okay, back to Y2K and back to the phones, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
How you doing? Speak up.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering if we all have Windows 98 installed on the computers if they would get affected, too, by the Y2K.
What do you think, Isaac?
It depends on... Well, there's more than one thing that can be screwed up on the home personal computer. If you have a very old BIOS, all of a sudden, that's going to fail. So now Windows 98, who's keeping track of its own dates, I don't know if it is compliant. If somebody... It is? Okay, thank you.
Because I know there was supposed to be an earlier version, a boot version that came out before it that wasn't supposed to be, like... so hot that it had like a little problems with it.
Right.
Then they came out with another version where it's supposed to be like 2000 ready and like you're supposed to set up your computer a certain way to test if it's supposed to be 2000 ready.
The beta version wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, does it guarantee that it's going to be, you know, this is going to have no problems with the personal computers at home?
Nobody is going to guarantee anything because there's the possibility that they would lose badly.
Have you called Microsoft and asked them if they would guarantee it?
No, not really.
Try it. If you want to laugh, see what kind of response you get.
I'd actually be curious.
They'll probably tell me yes.
Well, but, see what happens.
And all computers at home, what can it happen to the computer? Well,
the thing is, you know, your computers are going to be speaking with other computers over the net, and, you know, one of those computers may react badly, and mail may not get sent, or updates may not be passed along the way they're supposed to be because the date didn't get translated correctly there. So you could be affected indirectly, even if your own personal system works just fine.
Oh, okay.
And the same holds true of just about every other aspect of our life. That's, of course, assuming that I take this seriously, which I don't.
Yeah, but it should work, though. Is it going to be such a drastic problem where it's going to affect, like, me, let's say?
Well, for what you're doing, I'm assuming it's like word processing in the, you know, in a casual game and so forth.
Yeah, just, like, looking stuff up on the web.
You probably won't have a horrible, horrible difficulty.
No, because your electricity would be cut off, and you won't have any way of using your computer. Right? Isn't that what we're talking about? I mean, I don't want people to panic. I want to, you know, just draw things out here. But electricity is going to fail, mayhem in the streets.
If you want scenarios, I can give you scenarios.
Yeah, give us scenarios. That's what we want to hear about.
Let's say I'm on the internet and browsing through stuff.
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to have a problem with, you know, using a computer, like, let's say, actually going on the computer and signing on, and they're not going to have a problem with my accounts and
stuff. Well, your points of failure are, firstly, your own machine. Assuming your software will work, that you can actually dial your modem and so forth, that will bring you to your second point of failure, which is your internet service provider. If their equipment is having problems, you're not going to get online at all. So say you get past your ISP. Now you're using the internet itself. The internet is consistent of a number of routers and gateways and yada, 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 so on and so forth. The internet was actually designed so that if systems fail, you can still be rerouted around problem areas. So you could conceivably get around problem number three, which is actually connecting to the remote server. Point of failure number four is if the remote server is actually even running. If they're using an old system to actually serve your web page, they may have crashed and you're not going to be able to get there. So there's a lot of things along the way that could become a problem. But there are some, it's reasonably, you could reasonably get there if you had to.
Thanks for the call. We're going to move on. Also, you know, one other point I heard about with regards to internet accounts, a lot of them are going to come into existence in the year 2000 and say, hey, this person hasn't changed his password in 100 years. It's about time he did that, and they're going to lock the person out.
Or
conversely, they'll say, it's 100 years before this person's account was ever created, so therefore let him in with no password whatsoever because it doesn't yet exist.
Well, billing will get interesting, too.
Billing will get very
interesting. Especially for America Online. You know,
it's either going to be very big or very small.
Very true.
Yeah.
Negative numbers, and they owe you money. That'd
absolutely. So that's by the way, we just got notified by two different phones that we have 115 internet listeners, so big hello to all those people out there. Ray, yes.
Well, one of the things that's going to happen on his personal computer is that when we save files, they put a system time date stamp on those files.
Mm-hmm.
And if he saved the files yesterday, and it's 1999, and he does it today, and the computer looks at it as 00, it may erase his file, saying it's the older file, looking to keep the newer ones. Files are not going to get updated on personal computers.
Mm-hmm. Well, on some anyway.
On some. Well,
how about Macs?
On Macs?
Yeah,
Macs have been Y2K compliant since 1984.
Really?
Yes.
That's when they came out.
That's the very first Mac off the assembly line was dealing
Talk
with
about thinking
years.
16 years ahead.
It's
something.
Incredible.
That's why Mac is where it is now, because they think 16 years ahead.
Well, Apple computers always been, you know,
all right,
thinking.
Let's take a call over here. And we're getting into the danger zone here, but let's take a call anyway. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. It's Professor Kleistron. Could I just change the subject to pirate radio for a second?
Only if it's very quick, because we're running out of time.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was going to say, first of all, it's not just on FM anymore, and I'm trying to encourage pirate stations in this area. But I just hope that they won't get too, that our local pirates won't get too caught up in the legal end of pirate radio. We should do what they did in the book Red October, and that's overrun them with stations.
Absolutely. I
Bye-bye.
Agree with you totally. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well,
oops. You see, the thing with the button here, this is nothing personal. The thing with the button is once I push the button, I can't unpush the button. And you hear the person trying to talk for a second after I push the button. There's nothing I can do. I can't bring them back.
I'm not a god, you know. I just press the buttons.
Well, another interesting thing about pirate radio is that it's likely to survive Y2K.
Yeah, that's something right there. I don't know what's going to happen to radio. You know, it's going to be an interesting week here at BAI as well, or any radio station for that matter. Okay, let's take another phone call. Let's go over here this time. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Hey, this is Root from Brooklyn, and I was just going to talk about October 6th issue of PC Magazine. They talked about Y2K.
Okay.
And one of the writers, he talked about the electrical grid and the electrical companies.
Yes.
He said that something less than, say, like 5 or 10% of all companies are Y2K ready because they just have so many different chips and processors, and they're all undocumented. They have to check.
Embedded controllers.
Yeah, the embedded controllers are very easily... if one of them fails, a lot of these systems will just shut down for safety issues. Thank you, OSHA. One of the problems with power is that power plants need an amount of energy to actually start their generators. You have these things rotating at incredibly high speeds, and typically they make enough power so that they can keep doing this. Well, once you shut down a generator, you need to get it back up. So when plants were originally devised, you had these little diesel jump start mechanisms that sat in a shed out back or something and would actually start the generators. Well, as time went by and the grids were established, it became acceptable to remove these diesel startup engines and simply suck power from the next guy on the grid to start your generator. Well, if you have enough failures, all of a sudden, all these stations are going to try and start sucking power from their neighbors to start their generators, and that's going to trip the breakers on their neighbors.
Did that happen to AT&T in 1990 with all their cell phone system shut down?
That was...
When they sucked power, they had to get an okay from the other?
Right, and it kept tripping up and up the system.
Yeah.
That was SS7 being implemented and not exactly being understood along the way.
Right. But so far as power, this has happened on the West Coast where one station actually knocked off the grid in Washington. They tried jumping off the next guy. The next guy's breakers tripped, so he went down. So then the two of them were trying to start from a third guy.
Wait, that was real life?
This is real life.
I thought that was a film. That really happened?
This has happened.
That's the thing. You know, I see news, and I turn to one of the movie channels. I can't separate them because life is getting as strange as films, or maybe films are getting as dull as life. I don't know.
One or the other.
Thanks for the call. We're out of time. Isaac and Ray, I want to thank you very much for stopping in and talking about... Y2K countdown to doom as we start the sobering series of programs, just one year and change left to go. Next week, however, we'll be talking about something a bit more optimistic, the beginning of something kind of pleasant here in New York, DSL. We'll be talking with the first DSL provider in the city, in the area. So stay tuned for that program. That's a week from tonight. Until then, it's Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Hook. Have yourselves a good night, and stay compliant with Y2K. Good night.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse, but if I could, they would. Or did we fall for the best?
If you've been abused or harassed by the police, then document it. Call the New York City Police Watch Hotline at 212-614-6454. For information and legal referrals, the New York City Police Watch Hotline, 212-614-6454. If the police abuse or harass, let's document it. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, a nonprofit organization.
You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Stay tuned for Tahrir, your weekly magazine on Arab and Muslim issues.